From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm a man, I'm a man, I'm a mighty, mighty anchor man, Bill Curtis. And here is your host at the Brooklyn Academy of Music in Brooklyn, New York, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Brooklyn. That's what they call a Brooklyn salute. We got a great show for everybody today. Since we are in Brooklyn, we figured we'd get some local color from a native born here in Brooklyn, graduated from Valley Stream High nearby. And he's a former firefighter with Engine Company 55 in Little Italy. A gentleman by the name of Steve Buscemi, I think is how you say it. Steve Buscemi.
You'll
be joining us. So no matter what your humble beginnings, we want you to call in and play our games. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Let's welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Who's this?
This is Kate Kenny. I'm calling from Los Angeles, California.
Oh, what do you do in Los Angeles?
I'm a Food Network producer. I make a lot of Food Network shows. Chopped, Sweet Genius, Beat Bobby Flay, just to name a few.
Beat Bobby Flay?
It's the most sadistic show on the Food
Network. Right. Well, welcome to our show, Kate.
Thank you.
Let me introduce you to our panel. First up, a comedian you can see in the third season of Orange is the New Black, June 12th on Netflix, and in the new movie Trainwreck, premiering July 17th, that's Mike Birbiglia.
Hey.
We also have a comedian and the head writer for Inside Amy Schumer. It's Jesse Klein.
Hi. Hey, Jesse.
And a former writer for The Colbert Report and Late Night with Seth Meyers. He's appearing as an actor in this season of Veep. It's Peter Gross.
Hi.
Hey, Peter. Nice to meet you.
So, Kate, you're going to play Who's Bill this time. Bill Curtis is going to read you three quotations from this week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you will win our prize. Scorekeeper Emeritus Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail. You ready to play?
I'm very excited, yeah.
Now, for your first quote, it's three in one. It's three quotes from three different people. First,
I am a candidate.
And?
I am a candidate.
And?
Yes, I'm running.
What large group just added three more people to its numbers?
The Democratic Party?
Not the Democratic Party.
Oh, the GOP did? Really?
Yes, the GOP added three new people who want to do what?
Run for president.
Exactly right. There are now even more, three more Republican candidates for president. This week, with the addition of Ben Carson, Mike Huckabee, and Carly Fiorina, we now have 120 million Republican candidates for president. That's right. Every Republican in America is now running for president. Debates will be held in Texas, not in a theater in Texas, but in the entire state of Texas. Moderator Wolf Blitzer will stand at the edge of Oklahoma and shout.
I feel like Mike Huckabee, like he ran before, and that guy, like, he doesn't do anything. Like, he ran for president, and then he plays bass. Is that your argument for, like, what he can do?
Well, he also, he's the one who wrote the book, Guns, Grits, and Gravy. Is
right,
that
and
one?
I can say you this because I've tried it. Worst cookbook ever.
Yeah.
But my favorite is Ben Carson. You know who this guy is?
Yes.
Ben Carson was a well-known neurosurgeon, very inspirational figure, who is running for president because the day after, a few years ago, he appeared with President Obama at a breakfast and criticized the president to his face. The next day, the Wall Street Journal read an editorial headlined, Ben Carson for President. Right, because, as we know, criticizing somebody to their face means you get to have their job. That's why baseball teams are always inviting drunk guys from the bleachers to come out and pitch.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like if a streaker ran on a baseball field and he just tossed them a mitt and they're like, third base.
Yeah. All right, well, let me get a uniform and then I'll do it.
Kate, here is your next quote.
I feel as though I had the baby myself.
That was one Amanda Kopko of Oregon, one of the many excited people who actually was waiting in London just for a chance to glimpse who?
Oh, at the new prince.
The new prince.
Of England. Oh, it's a girl.
It's a girl. You didn't know. It's a girl. The royal baby.
Of England.
The princess. Yes. Yeah, this week, This week actually saw the most important election in the United Kingdom in decades. It's the first one where a true multi-party system was... it's a baby! People are so much more excited about the royal baby, a wrinkly, pink-faced little baby. So this is a lesson for everybody back in America, right? Don't run as a Republican or Democrat. If you want to get people excited, run as a baby.
I'm not even excited by any of the British people who are princes and kings and queens. Like, why would I care about the baby one?
Because she's a princess.
Yeah, look, I agree with Peter.
Dude.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that she's done is be born. Like, have a resume.
I feel bad for Kate Middleton that, like, now that she's had her second, like, she has a baby, and within 24 hours, she has to, like, trot out and look perfect. You know what I mean?
That she has to look
she
perfect.
She has, like, yeah. She always, she does, this is the second time where she comes out, and she's, I guess she went through labor both times, and then she appears, and she's, like, been glam squatted.
It's true. As a matter of fact, she looked so good coming out of the hospital that there are actual conspiracy theories that she didn't actually have the baby.
No, there are not.
No, because she looked too good, you know. People are like, well, maybe she had the baby, but not in a normal way. Maybe the royals have some different way of having babies. Like, they just take a lock of her hair and they start a new one in a planter. By the way, the new royal baby, this is the second baby, as you say, first girl for the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge, fourth in line for the throne, and is named after a string of former royalty. So her full name is Charlotte Diana Babar Latifah Berger.
Okay, so firstborn, though, was a boy.
Right.
From William and Kate.
Yeah.
So then...
he's, like, third in line.
Right.
But if he can't survive...
fulfill the duties...
right.
...of being standing there.
Right.
Yes. It is kind of sad for them. They are born into a life like that where, like... they're born into, like, the end of an era,
so
basically.
Sad. It's so sad.
It's so sad.
They're having such a bad time.
There's nothing sadder.
Yeah, what if they had dreams of living in poverty and...
yeah. They'll never have direct deposit.
Yeah.
How sad.
All right, your last quote comes from a disgruntled employee talking about one of his coworkers.
Tom sucks. I'm going to make that next ball an effing balloon.
Well, looks like that co-worker is going to be in a little trouble with the NFL. Who is it?
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady, yes. Tom Brady, the quarterback. Do you remember back in January before the Super Bowl?
Whoa.
When Tom Brady held a press conference denying all knowledge of the scandal known as Deflategate while wearing this funny winter hat? Well, it turns out that was his opposite cap. Whatever he says while wearing it, he means the opposite. Sometimes at home, he puts it on and says to Giselle, "We aren't the most gorgeous people ever to live." And they both laugh.
They should take his handsomeness away as
really?
A punishment.
Well, we were wondering about
that. Should give him some sort of scar across the face that he has to carry with him for the rest of his life.
Do you guys care about this?
Yes, this is so much more important than British children.
I care. This is dividing my household. This is very personal.
Yeah, your husband is a huge Tom Brady fan,
right? My husband
is,
Tom Brady is important to him. And I kind of hate him.
You hate Tom Brady?
Yeah. Because Tom Brady, and I can acknowledge, like, solid football skills. Like, clearly.
Oh, you mean on Tom Brady's
part? On Tom Brady.
Oh, he is good at playing football.
He's pretty good at playing
football.
Oh, you
think he's good at it?
He's okay at it.
Okay.
He seems to practice football probably a couple times a year.
Yeah.
But when Tom Brady, I just saw, like, a clip of some press conference he did where he said, "Look, I don't know everything." And I was like, "I know Tom Brady." We know you don't know everything. Like, yeah. he's kind of a bag of rocks, that guy.
I cannot stand the way you women look at a really good-looking guy and just assume he's stupid. You know?
Oh, no, I'm not assuming. He's proven it over and over again.
Bill, how did Kate do in our quiz?
You know, we're going to give Kate all three. She's a winner.
Great. Thank you so much, Kate. Congratulations. We want want to remind everyone they can join us most weeks back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Jesse, the governor of Texas brought in the National Guard to defend against a possible takeover. Who was he worried might be invading the great Lone Star State of Texas?
Of Texas?
Yes.
He brought in what?
Well, he alerted the National Guard to keep an eye on this because he's worried.
But they haven't come in yet.
Well,
but look
out. They're already among us. They look just like us.
I'm going to just say I pregnancy brain is a real thing, so any answer that I give, is it aliens? They look just like us?
They look just like us.
What?
Do any of you guys can help out the pregnant lady? Do you know?
Is it other Americans?
Yeah, it's the American government.
I feel a little embarrassed my first answer was aliens. I will admit, that's pretty far from the right answer.
And the idea is that the U.S. Special Forces, the military, announced this very large military exercise all across the Southwest. They do this all the time. But this time, somebody leaked a map they had come up with for the military exercise, basically a war game where they pretend to be at war, and the entire state of Texas is labeled hostile territory for the purposes of the game. So all these people online were like, aha, you see? The U.S. government is going to come in, and this is the theory. They're going to invade with special forces. They're going to seize all the guys with guns and put people into mass incarceration camps in abandoned Walmarts.
Also, if you were going to invade a state, wouldn't you pick the one that had the least guns as opposed to the one that has the most guns? Like, there's probably more guns in Texas than there are, like, in the Army.
I know.
I would imagine. Like, what's like a lane? Like, Connecticut probably doesn't have that many guns.
Sure.
Let's go take Connecticut, Rhode Island.
Yeah.
It feels like Texas, it's like Texas was a kid that was doing okay in school, and then Texas started hanging out with Florida.
Yeah. No, bad influence.
Bad influence.
Yes.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is supported by Citrix GoToMeeting. With a new flexible layout, GoToMeeting is designed to work the way you work. Meet face-to-face, share screens, share your ideas, and work together in real time. For a 30-day free trial, visit GoToMeeting.com today and click on the Try It Free button to get started.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We're playing this week with Mike Birbiglia, Jesse Klein, and Peter Gross. And here again is your host at the Brooklyn Academy of Music in Brooklyn, New York, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Right now it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is John Crowley, originally from Dublin, Ireland, but for the past 22 years I've been living in Petaluma, California.
Petaluma, California is lovely.
Can you say it?
Petaluma. I've been
there. Perfect. You got it right.
How else would you say it?
Fresno.
For example. Well, it's nice to have you with us, John. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Bill, what is John's topic?
Get Miss Marple on the case.
Agatha Christie never set a single novel in the workplace. She should have, because this week we had an exciting story about office intrigue and a mystery solved. Guess the real story about the solving of a workplace mystery, and you win Carl Counsell's voice on your voicemail. You ready to do this?
Yep.
Okay, let's hear first from Mr. Michael Birbiglia.
Alex Finkelstein had been working at a data storage company in Waltham, Massachusetts for 6 years. When he realized that often his colleagues wouldn't look him in the eye or talk to him for more than a few seconds. This is a tech company, Finkelstein joked, so at first I thought it was normal. But when my colleague Charlotte asked me to, quote, murder these expense reports like you murdered your wife, I knew something was up. Apparently, Finkelstein's boss, Mark Dunkelman, an amateur ghost hunter, had apparently recorded employees' conversations on a pin-sized device he'd set up in the break room with the intent of catching an office poltergeist. That's how he heard Finkelstein say, quote, yeah, baby, she's dead. Our troubles are over. When Finkelstein was questioned by police, he explained that he'd been in the break room rehearsing for his new show at the Mystery Cafe, Boston's longest-running mystery dinner theater, and their upcoming show, Yeah, Baby, She's Dead. One troubling postscript is that Alex Finkelstein's actual wife has been actually missing for the past 3 months. He's asked us not to mention that, but to mention that Yeah, Baby, She's Dead has been extended through July. Every ticket is still available.
So, a man suspected of murder in the workplace turns out just to be, at least for now, rehearsing a murder mystery play. Your next story of a cubicle whodunit comes from Jesse Klein.
The 34 employees at Zephyr Graphic Design had always considered themselves friends as well as coworkers. This was until Wednesday when Zephyr CEO Ben Tillman was sued by his own employees. It all began a month ago when Ben walked in to find a Xerox of someone's butt in the photocopy tray. Unamused, he threw it away. But the next morning, there was yet another butt photocopy. Ben, known for his no-nonsense attitude, sent a humorless office-wide email demanding that the butt copying stop, but it continued. Ben called an all-hands meeting in the conference room, outlining how this prank was technically a form of sexual harassment, and he would not tolerate any sexual harassment at his company. Ben decided he was done fooling around. He'd noticed the butt in the photocopy had a small mole. Ben sent another office-wide memo demanding every employee to Xerox their butt in his presence and present him with the copy so he could find the culprit. The company was immediately and collectively deeply creeped out. And just a few days later, Ben was smacked with a $2 million class action sexual harassment lawsuit. To Ben's great embarrassment, his legal team's defense of his innocence is based on the discovery of his guilt. After interviewing his wife, they discover that his buttock has the mole that matches the one in the photocopies. However, he'd recently begun taking a heavy dose of Ambien every night and was sleepwalking to the office at dawn to Xerox his own butt, only waking up when he was done. Ben is currently in therapy, struggling to understand why he is photocopying his butt in his sleep.
It turns out the butt photocopier was him all along. And your last story of an office mystery finally cracked comes from Mr. Peter Gross.
For years, scientists at the Parkes Observatory in rural New South Wales, Australia, were baffled by mysterious signals they detected on their fancy 210-foot radio telescope. They had no idea where the signals, known as peritons, were coming from. But after an exhaustive search of the surrounding area, these Oppenheimers of the Outback finally discovered the enigmatic periton-producing source had been right under their noses the whole time. It was the microwave in their kitchen. A PhD student named Emily Petrov made the discovery.
"We were getting some strange signals that appeared to be coming from very nearby," said Miss Petrov in a stereotypical Australian accent,
who realized that opening up the microwave while it was still running produced the suspicious peritons. The previously baffled scientist admitted that their first clue should have been that the peritons had only been detected during business hours, and their second clue should have been that their detection was always accompanied by the smell of a Lean Cuisine black bean burrito. How long did it take this crack team of some of Australia's best scientists to make this simple discovery? Oh, only 17 years.
All right, here are your choices. One of these mysteries was solved. From Mike Birbiglia, whether Alex Finkelstein actually killed his wife or was just rehearsing a play. From Jesse Klein, who was Xeroxing their butt every night. Or from Peter Gross, where that mysterious signal discovered by the radio telescope in Australia was coming from. Which of these were the mysteries that were solved?
Well, and I like Jesse's, but I think I'm going to go for Peter's, the Australian microwave.
You do? You like that one?
Yeah, I think I like that one.
All right. So we actually spoke to somebody who actually helped discover the truth.
Spent about a couple of months looking through a lot of old data, and I realized it was microwave signals.
All right.
That was Emily Petrov. She's a PhD student and part of the team that finally discovered the signals were coming from the microwave. Congratulations, John. You got it right. You're in a point for Peter Gross for telling the truth. You've won our prize. Carol Castle, we'll record the greeting.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Thanks so much.
And now the game where we ask local heroes about things people just don't talk about around here. It's called Not My Job. So Steve Buscemi was born here in Brooklyn and grew up in nearby Valley Stream, just a few miles away, where, amazingly, he was a jock. But he's become one of the most beloved, busy, and recognizable actors of our time, with starring roles in the classics Reservoir Dogs and Fargo, and he just finished a five-year run as the sentimental gangster boss of Atlantic City on HBO's Boardwalk Empire. Steve Buscemi, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
It's really fun to have you.
Thank you.
So, Steve, as I mentioned, back in high school, you were an athlete, right?
Yeah, I was on the wrestling team. I played soccer and a little bit of track, and I had a pretty mean reverse cradle.
Is that a track term or a wrestling term?
It's a wrestling term.
Yeah, okay. you sort of hold him and you put their head in the ground.
You get his head in a headlock and a leg, and you grip your hands together and...
Can you still do that?
Move. I try it on my wife every yes.
And but at a certain point, you decided to try to get into show business as a performer. You were a stand-up, right?
Yes, I tried doing stand-up. I don't know how, but I passed the auditions at the Improv in like 1978, and I would hang out there.
Yeah.
But I would never get on. I would just be there like late at night and watch all the, like, Jerry Seinfeld and Gilbert Gottfried and all these guys perform. And then one night, they did not have anybody there to go on. And it was still, like, early in the evening. And the manager, you know, came over, and he looked at me, and he said, "All right, you.
Yeah.
You're up.
It's your moment.
It's my moment.
It's going to happen."
And I was just about to go up, and then Paul Reiser came walking in. And I'm like, "Oh, thank God Paul's here." And they put Paul up. And,
I think Mad About You would have been a lot better if you were on Hell and Hell.
I did guest star on Mad About
did you,
you where I great. Where I played a disgruntled subway token guy who went to film school with Paul Reiser, and I got to yell at him in the scene.
Really? Did Paul know this?
No, I don't think he would have cast me if he knew that I really like held a
held an actual grunt.
Yes. And then I told him the story, and he went, "Wow, you really do hate me."
I'm dying to know, what was your comedy like?
Oh. This is why I quit. I don't want to talk about it.
I've been thinking about all the roles I've seen you in, and you have had some of the most memorable deaths I've seen.
I've
done a lot of deaths.
Yeah.
You died in, sorry for the spoilers, Big Lebowski. Probably your best death. Would everybody agree? Fargo, Into the Wood Chipper.
Yeah. Yeah.
In that scene... where the other actor is holding your legs, were those, I know they're your actual legs, but did they try to make them look like your actual legs? Did they mold your calves to make the fake legs?
No, I don't know where they got that leg. And I was a little upset.
Yeah.
That looks nothing like my leg.
Mr. Cohen, can I have a moment with you, please? Look.
But people, you know, sometimes stop me and say that that's their favorite scene of mine in Fargo.
Really?
Yeah, I'm serious.
You were so convincing as a disembodied leg and a spurt of blood.
You look great now.
Yeah.
I mean, you look fantastic.
Perhaps your saddest death, at least for me as a fan, was in The Sopranos.
Oh, yeah.
Where Tony himself shotgunned you. I was sad to see you go.
Me too. And I remember I called my mother. You know, we're not supposed to say what's happening David Chase had a very strict rule. But that afternoon, I called my mother to tell her that I was going to die that night on The Sopranos, because she's seen me die so many times.
Yeah, well.
So I wanted to prepare her. And I said, "Mom, just so you know, I'm going to get it tonight." And she says, but who killed you? I said, "Tony." She says, "Oh, Steven. He's your cousin." I said, "I know, but I've done bad things. My character, you know, and so that night after the show, I called her to see if she was okay. And this is only, you know, can come from a mother. She said, "Oh, you look so handsome." After I was shot.
Really?
After, laying there on the porch, the way you look so handsome. So peaceful.
Steve Buscemi, what a pleasure to talk to you. But we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Complete Form B46A and Get Back in Line.
Now, as we were discussing, you were not always Steve Buscemi, famous actor. In fact, we once read that when you were a young man, your father had you take the civil service exam. So we're going to ask you three questions about the civil service. Get two right, you'll win Carl's voice on the voicemail of one of our listeners. Bill, who is Steve Buscemi playing for?
Brian Calandra of New York, New York.
All right. Here we go. First question. Now, we're all familiar with the postal worker, the proud civil servant in charge of delivering our mail. But along through the long history of the Postal Service, they have occasionally faced competition, such as which of these? A, mail cats,
domestic cats outfitted with mail pouches. B, the Tony Express of 1930s Staten Island, where a group of guys named Tony delivered mail anywhere you wanted in the borough. Or C, and this is just late last year, based on the notion's popularity on the podcast Serial, Ira Glass tried to introduce real-life mail keeps.
How could any of these be real?
Mail cats, the Tony Express, or real mail keeps?
I don't know why, but I'm going to go with the Tony Express.
I love the Tony Express. It's actually mail cats.
Come on.
It's true. In the 1870s, the Belgian Society for the Elevation of the Domestic Cat tested out mail cats rigged up like carrier pigeons with messages tied to their collars. But the problem is that unlike carrier pigeons, cats go wherever the hell they want. So
yeah, you couldn't really pick a worse animal.
I know.
Really?
It's
Why
the worst one.
Cat?
All right, you still have two more chances. The DMV may be the most hated part of the civil service, but we're here to tell you there's a reason for that, as in which of these? A, one of these really happened. A DMV official in Cleveland was disciplined for trying out his five-minute comedy routine on each customer because he was, quote, trying to get them to smile for their license picture. B, a man who moved from New Mexico to Connecticut was told he couldn't have a Connecticut license because this, quote, this branch doesn't handle foreign transactions. Or C, a DMV official in Reno would prank people taking the driving test by throwing a baby doll under a tire and screaming.
You see, now all of those sound like they could have really happened.
You're actually right. We made this too hard.
Oh.
The first one was the five-minute comedy routine for the people getting their licenses. So he sets them down. He says, a funny thing happened to me on the way to the DMV. You ever been to the DMV? It's crazy. No. That one. Or a guy goes from New Mexico, tries to get a new license in Connecticut. They said, we can't handle foreign transactions. Or a DMV official in Reno would give people the driving test and then throw a baby doll, under the tire and go, ah, you killed the baby.
It's not that one. It's not the third one.
All right.
The second one does really sound plausible.
Mm-hmm. But they like it. They've been to the DMV.
I'm so tempted to go with the first one. And I'm probably wrong, but I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go?
Did I say A?
You said A. Yeah.
It's B.
It's B. You're right, it's B. It was the guy in Connecticut. The guy says, look, just call New Mexico and you'll straighten this out. And the guy says, I can't. We're not allowed to make international calls here. Connecticut DMV. All right, so this one is for all the marbles. Right. Perhaps the branch of the civil service that people complain about the most is the TSA. And in one recent case, our worst nightmares were confirmed when two agents in Denver were fired for doing what? A, to save time, they just pasted one of those men's room stick figures of a man on their screen so they wouldn't have to check anybody. B, they ran a business in the airport parking lot selling bottles of water, wine, and gourmet jam taken from passengers. Or C, they set the machine to alarm whenever an attractive person went through so they could check them by hand.
C.
Yes, it's C again. It was sort of brilliant but creepy. The trick was whenever the scout saw an attractive guy through, she would alert her partner to set the machine to female. So then the machine would detect a kind of anomaly in the groin area. You'd have to be checked by hand. They've been fired, so worry not. Good. Bill, how does Steve Buscemi do?
2 out of 3.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
That's a
win. Well done.
Thank you.
Steve Buscemi's Emmy-nominated AOL web series, Park Bench, with Steve Buscemi, is coming back for a second season. Steve Buscemi, thank you so much for being
thank
with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This episode of Wait, Wait and this message are made possible by A24, presenting Ex Machina, the provocative new sci-fi thriller that has audiences and critics seduced. Manola Dargis of the New York Times calls it a critic's pick, a futuristic shocker about men, the machines they make, and the women they dream up. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone declares, "You've never seen anything like it." Ex Machina,
now playing everywhere.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We're playing this week with Peter Gross, Jesse Klein, and Mike Birbiglia. And here again is your host at the Brooklyn Academy of Music in Brooklyn, New York, Peter Spangle.
Thank you, Bill Curtis. In just a minute, Bill reveals his favorite New York skyscraper, the Chrysler Building. That hurt me, too. It's in our Listener Limerick Challenge game. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, a panel, some more questions for you guys from the week's news. Peter, according to the internet, the new look for men, the one that women crave, is what?
It is heavy, balding, and insensitive to their feelings. No,
you're actually almost right.
Is it just heavy?
Yeah, it's you're sort of looking like what?
Like Jerry Garcia.
I'll give you a hint. When that guy takes off his shirt, the only six-pack I want to see is a six-pack of juice boxes.
Juice boxes? Looking like a baby?
No. Who often carries around juice boxes?
Children? Juice delivery men. Dad?
Yes,
looking
dad.
Looking like a dad?
Looking like a dad. Specifically, the dad bod. The dad bod is the best news for men since we found out we get to run everything. According to a column by college sophomore Mackenzie Pearson, that went viral this week. Everybody was talking about it. The new attractive body type for men is the dad bod. According to her, this is a look that says, quote, I go to the gym occasionally, but I also drink heavily on the weekends and enjoy eating eight slices of pizza at a time.
This was written by a college sophomore?
This was written by a 19-year-old woman.
With
and her theory,
issues.
Her theory, which is a great theory.
I love the way dads look. Oh, no.
She's like, the new look that's in for that women love is my dad's body. Like,
well,
what's up, lady?
Oh, Mackenzie.
Well, she has a number of reasons. The idea is that women, she posits, do not like the chiseled, you know, muscular fit look so much as they like the more comfortable dad look.
I have been saying this for years.
And it's true.
For years I've been telling women this.
I know.
And they don't listen.
It's terrible.
I do think the body you described is generally just a man body.
Yeah.
Like, childless with child, like someone who works out sometimes.
That's exactly it.
And then drinks. Sounds like pretty much my observation across the board.
Yeah.
Up to this point in my life.
Yeah, and the message for all those men is you don't have to feel bad because that's what women really like.
I don't know if I'd say really like.
Peter, a television station in Albuquerque, New Mexico has raised the alarm. There's a terrifying secret to men's beards. What is it?
They don't look good. I don't know. I may have a hint.
Everybody's going to be running out to buy Just for Men sanitizer.
Just for Men sanitizer? Oh, the beards are bacteria ridden?
Yes, they're filled with poop germs, according to the investigative news team.
How does that happen?
No, this is according to the investigative news team at KOAT News 7 in Albuquerque. They swabbed some beards, right? And then they saw what grew from them in Petri dishes. And according to them, beards are basically hairy face toilets.
Well, I'll just say that now you know why we're happy to just get a dad body.
Yeah.
And not a fecal beard.
Yes.
On top of it.
So, Jesse, McDonald's is updating the Hamburglar. Now, instead of a cartoonish thief, he's what?
I saw the picture.
Yeah.
And to me, he looks like an actual criminal. Like a hardened criminal.
A hardened criminal.
Like someone you should genuinely be afraid of.
Right. You're saying he's not so much a burglar as sort of a home invader, is what you're saying.
It looks like there might be a home invasion.
I understand. No, actually, the answer is he's a suburban dad. See, the
No. He does not look like a suburban dad.
Wait, that's what it is? Suburban dad?
Yeah. The answer is suburban dad. Let me explain. Now, the Hamburglar has not been seen in a McDonald's commercial for 13 years.
Because he was in jail.
Well, yes.
And he's out on DNA evidence.
No,
now.
It turns out.
The most recent Serial podcast got him out.
Yeah, really?
That's what next season Serial is going to be about.
That would be so funny.
Sarah Koenig.
If on next year's Serial, I'd be like, hi, I'm Sarah Koenig. This week on Serial, the Hamburglar. And then you hear rubble, rubble, rubble.
You have rubble, a call rubble. From the McDonaldland Penitentiary. Rubble, rubble. The fact that everybody got that is ridiculous.
Yeah. You know who has a dad body?
Who?
Grimace.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924, or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming show at the Mann Center in Philadelphia on July 9th. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. Who's this?
This is Lane.
Hey, Lane.
I'm calling from Midwest, Wyoming.
Midwest, Wyoming?
Yes.
I have never heard
Midwest.
Of... I've never heard of Midwest, Wyoming. Where is that?
It is in central Wyoming.
Oh, it is. What do you do there in Midwest, Wyoming?
I teach music in a tiny school that has kindergarten through... seniors all under one roof.
Wow. Well, Lane, welcome to the show. Bill Curtis is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a big winner. Ready to play?
I think so.
Let's do this. Here is your first limerick.
In hotel rooms where others cannot pry, I allow my emotions to fly. As blankets envelop, my eyes start to well up. I check in and have a good...
Crying.
Yes, there you go.
Good.
Crying. For only $85 a night, the Mitsui Garden Hotel in Tokyo is offering special crying-only rooms just for women. The rooms are stocked with everything you need for a night of good crying, tissues, sad movies like Terms of Endearment, Steel Magnolias, and Cars 2. But why go all the way to Tokyo and spend all that money when you can have the same tragic ambiance at any Motel 6?
Ooh, if Tom Odette was here.
I know. Okay, Lane, here is your next limerick.
No one else will condemn or condone if I chew all the meat off a bone. I'm offending no group as I'm slurping my soup. No one cares if I'm dining...
alone.
Right, alone. Very
Lane, good.
A lot of people, including myself, feel self-conscious dining alone or doing other date-like things on your own. But scientists at the University of Maryland have determined that you shouldn't feel embarrassed because no one even notices you. So not only are you pathetic and alone, you're invisible. Feel better? But really, is there a more perfect romantic evening than going out for dinner by yourself, than checking into your own little suite at the crying hotel? Lane, here is your last limerick.
I'm a killer who swims in the dark. If I could, I'd take walks in the park. I have three rows of teeth, but a heart's underneath. There's a soft, tender side to this...
shark.
Shark it is!
Shark, yes! A new BBC documentary airing this week reveals that great white sharks have a softer side. They're not the big, ferocious killing machines portrayed in movies like Jaws, Jaws 2, Jaws 3D, and Avengers 3, Now There's a Shark in It. According to the photographer who shot the documentary, the sharks allowed him to swim freely with them without a cage. The photographer said he was looking forward to a new career as a disembodied head floating in the Pacific.
Wait, what are they saying about sharks?
Well, they're saying that they're actually, the great white sharks are not the relentless killing machines that we've always thought, that they actually can be friendly and not kill you.
That they might check into a crying hotel.
They might.
Have a good cry.
Yeah.
They could constantly be crying, and we would never know.
That is an excellent, excellent point.
Bill, how did Lane do on our quiz?
3-0.
Very
Lane,
well done,
good
Lane.
Good for you.
Thank you very much.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Bill, can you give us the scores?
Peter has 5. Mike has 2. Jesse has 0.
All right, I accept that.
You have a chance to leap ahead with this first round of fill in the blank. The clock will start when I begin your first question.
Oh, really? I'm going. Okay.
You're going now. Here we go.
Okay. This isn't going to go well. Go.
Fill in the blank. A federal appeals court ruled Wednesday that the NSA's collection of blank records was illegal.
Phone records.
Yes. Military officials in Nigeria announced this week that they had freed another 200 women from the terrorist group blank.
Boko Haram?
Right. On Wednesday, over 50 blanks touched down across Oklahoma, Kansas, and Nebraska.
Tornadoes.
Right. On Tuesday, officials in California approved the state's first mandatory rules for blank.
Water conservation.
Right. This past weekend, 20 police officers in Seattle gathered at a basketball court in order to blank.
Play basketball.
No, to free a shirtless man who had gotten stuck upside down in one of the hoops.
No duh.
A new report from the IRS found that over 1,500 of their agents willfully blanked over the past 10 years.
Lied on their taxes?
Yes, or avoided filing them. Dave Coulier, the actor who played Uncle Joey, announced he would be returning for Netflix's reboot of Blank.
Full House.
Yes, after several newspapers reported that a Christie ally had pled guilty in the Bridgegate scandal in New Jersey, Blank was forced to take to Twitter to defend herself.
Oh, Kirstie Alley?
Of course, Kirstie Alley.
Yes.
The actress was trending on Twitter this week because people misread Christie Alley, that is Chris Christie's ally, as Kirstie Alley.
No way.
But unlike the ally of Governor Christie, Kirstie Alley had no role in the Bridgegate controversy, proving once again how hard it is for older female actors to get parts in statewide corruption scandals. Bill, how did Jesse do on our quiz?
Nothing for her to cry about in this one. She got 7 right. 14 more. She's got the lead.
Whoa. All right, Mike, you are up next. Fill in the blank. On Thursday, the U.S. and Saudi Arabia called for a renewable 5-day ceasefire in the war-torn country of blank.
I'm going to go with Canada, but I know it's wrong.
Yemen. Just hours before the deadline, Israeli Prime Minister Blank struck a deal to form a new coalition government.
Netanyahu?
Yes. For the first time in 50 years, ferry companies were given permission to offer service between Florida and Blank.
Cuba?
Yes. This week, a man in Kent, England, was accused of stealing a cell phone from Blank while in Blank.
A ferret horse.
No. Stealing a cell phone from his lawyer while in court. This week, Universe Publishing released Selfish, Blank's book of 445 selfies.
Phil Donahue.
That vain
sound. No, it's Kim Kardashian.
It is Kim Kardashian. Yeah. Police in Canada charged a 91-year-old woman with disturbing the peace after her neighbors complained about Blank.
Loud Seinfeld reruns.
No, her neighbors complained about her creaky rocking chair. She just rocked too hard. And all night long, apparently, on the porch. Police responded to the call to the loud rocker the way police usually do, but they shot the old lady in the back. Kidding! Happened in Canada. They just gave her a ticket and laughed about the whole thing. Bill, how did Mike Birbiglia do in our quiz?
He got 4 right for 8 more points, a total of 10, but Jesse still has the lead.
Right, okay, here we go. All right, Peter Gross. This is for the game,
this
fill in the
so
blank.
Important to me.
Hillary Clinton announced this week that she had agreed to once again testify at a House hearing on the attacks in blank.
I'm going to go with Benghazi.
You're right. On Tuesday, President Obama nominated Marine General Joseph Dunford to be the next chairman of the blank.
Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Right. According to a new report from the Labor Department, the U.S.'s blank claims remain at a 15-year low.
Unemployment?
Yeah, jobless. Instead of posting a negative Yelp review of a local Subway restaurant, a Chicago man allegedly blanked.
Drove his car into it.
No, he robbed the Subway, then ran across the street to buy a sandwich at Potbelly's.
Smart man. Good man.
Last Saturday, pre-race favorite American Pharoah won the 141st blank.
Kentucky Derby.
Right. This week, while answering questions from lawmakers in Parliament, the Prime Minister of Iceland rushed out to the chambers to blank.
To move out of Iceland.
No, to get the last piece of free cake in the lobby. The Prime Minister fled in the middle of questioning because he feared a national emergency that they would run out of cake. When criticized, he defended himself saying, and this is true, but it was chocolate devil's food cake with chocolate frosting, whipped cream, and braised pears.
That does sound
really,
very good.
You can't blame him for leaving or for making the cake as new deputy prime minister. Bill, did Peter Gross do well enough to win?
He did really well. He tried hard. He got 4 right for 8 more points, but that means Jesse wins the bassinet.
Wow. Well done. Wow. She came from nothing.
I feel pretty incredible right now.
You should. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, now that everybody else is running for president, who is going to declare their candidacy and actually surprise us? Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman is our benevolent overlord. Radio Love Fest is a partnership of BAM and WNYC, listener-supported public radio here in New York City. Philip Goedeke writes our limericks. Our intern is Jabrook Lynette Harris Courts. Our web guru is Beth Novi. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover of Brooklyn, New York, and Miles Dernboss. Technical directions from Lorna White. Thanks to the crew at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. Our CFO is Ann Nian. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Shillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Missed His Plane Danforth. Now, panel, who is going to announce they're running for president and shock us all? Mike Birbiglia.
Barack Obama will run again, proving that all email forwards from my dad are true.
Jesse Klein.
I think Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao are both going to declare they're running, and everyone's going to think it's going to be this incredible race, and then it's just going to fizzle.
And Peter Gross.
The one man who can defeat any and all opponents, no matter how powerful, Genghis Khan, and his obvious vice presidential running mate, James Khan.
Well, if any of the men of the race panel will ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Bill Curtis. Thanks also to Mike Birbiglia, the amazing Jesse Klein, the equally amazing Peter Gross. Thanks to everyone at NYC. Thanks to everyone here at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. Thanks to you for listening at home. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week in Chicago. This is NPR.